What fancy piece of technology is on your holiday wish list? A tablet? A camera? Or a computer so small and so light you can't believe it's actually a computer? Well, coming up on Central Standard, we'll be going inside Santa's workshop for a look at the careers behind our technology. The little elves who design, build, repair, maintain, and train. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, the computer guys and a professional IT staffer join us to look at the state of tech jobs in the region. Are they tickets to the easy life? Are they future-proof? Are they recession-proof? What areas are downsizing? What areas are growing? What degrees do you need? What certifications, if any? We want to hear what you're noticing around your offices, too. Plus, technology news lightning round, all coming up on today's Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. When the productivity of your entire office depends on a single brilliant IT professional, when your gadgets are sliming and speeding up faster than you could ever keep track of, it might seem like a job in IT is future-proof. But do these careers actually guarantee job security? Today, we separate fact from fiction about growth in careers in information technology. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. The computer guys are here. George Costello, an independent Mac and Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, CEO of Ideology. They're joining us to give us perspective on where IT careers are heading, as is Amy Ganot, president of PCM Technology Solutions and IT Staffing Solutions Company here in the Metro. Welcome all.
Thank you.
Good morning.
George and Tom, we're re-examining the IT function, as it were, here in 2011. The IT function as a component of businesses, universities, nonprofits, and individual users is a lot different than it used to be. Tom, how's it changed?
Well, you know, there's a lot more on the end user side than there were, you know, before the year 2000. So the staffs are bigger. IT is a much more critical part of the firmament in all organizations. And so the growth in IT has just followed its importance in our society.
George, take us up in that firmament. How has it changed?
Well, I guess it depends on what area, you know, that you're in, that you specialize in. I've always thought that being an IT tech was a sort of a two-edged kind of a position to be in. I mean, you could be a lot like a surgeon, for example, where you're just on call all the time. You know, you get a call at 3 a.m. because something's not right and we won't be able to function tomorrow and you have to drop everything and go fix it, basically. So as long as you're mentally okay, you know, with that sort of, something lurking over your shoulder all the time, then this is the career for you.
But, Amy, you know, we're moving a little bit out of that reactive IT space and into the more proactive development and maintenance space. Tell us about what you do at PCM Technologies.
Well, we're an IT staffing company, so we provide, computer folks across town. So whether it's all contract for hire, straight contract, or permanent placement. So we work with clients to help determine their needs. And most of our clients that we work with are proactive. They're developing a solution. They're trying to make IT not necessarily a cost center, but a revenue-generating area. So we want them to...
Explain that. Back up.
Okay.
And explain cost center versus revenue-generating area.
Well, historically, IT was considered a cost center, so meaning that it cost the company money. It didn't ever produce anything that made profitability for the company. So what they have done is taking that cost center and, hey, how can we use IT to generate revenue, to decrease or to increase efficiencies, to get more, you know, to sell our product across multiple channels so we can get the most money. They're using it now to generate revenue. So by making IT more profitable and making it part of the profit center, then that's where it's growing and expanding, and they're wanting more and more resources.
So what you're saying, Amy, is that what once was a standard operational expenditure or a standard administrative...
Right, just like human resources.
Tape, right, like yes. Human resources that doesn't produce anything necessarily other than efficiency and maintenance.
Exactly, keeping the business up and running. Now they're saying, hey, instead of just keeping the business up and running, how can we use this to create efficiencies, to You know, all, you know, just to do all that good stuff.
Amy, who are your clients typically?
Well, we work with we do a lot of interactive agencies. So like Barclay Evergreen and Partners is one of our clients. We do a lot with JP Morgan, H&R Block, Yellow. Then we do a lot of smaller clients like InTouch and Platform Advertising. So we have, they're all across town.
So Yellow would have a different specialized IT staffing need than H&R Block.
Oh, yes.
In what way?
Well, H&R Block is going to be they have a hardcore deadline. So even though they're trying to increase efficiencies, they have to have their product that's compatible to the tax laws by a certain date or they lose all their money. You know, you're talking about downtime and being on call. They're very much an on call. If during January to April, if they're down for even 10 minutes, they lose revenue. So they're going to be very they have to be both reactive and proactive.
Whereas Yellow might be more about logistics or yes. customer relationship management or something like
well,
that.
Well, and they're taking it to the next level. They have an online logistics program, and so they're doing things to, you know, they can do less than truck drives, and there's different things that they have logistic.
And let's open up the floor. What types of skill sets, computer guys, are in demand right now?
Software programmers, usually. You know, I think anybody that can that's a good language expert, a developer, a web. We call them web developers in our company because everything we do is on the web. And those are the ones that are in the most demand, and particularly ones that know the HTML5, kind of the newest web tools and languages that are adept with that. Those are the types of people that we look for most.
George, are developers at the top of the heap in the Apple space as well?
You know, not so much. At least Macs have always been kind of a creative tool for people like artists and musicians and so forth, and they haven't been mainstream business machines historically. Now, that is beginning to change as they're making some inroads into enterprise situations, but you don't see too much in the way of custom software being developed. Most people are using off-the-shelf stuff.
You mentioned mainstream business machines. The whole point of Steve Jobs going away to found Apple was so that it was not like, say, an international business machine.
Yeah.
Amy, why do people call in looking for IT workers with specific skill sets?
Well, it depends on what, for example, a .NET developer could not program in Java. You know, it depends on whether or not they're using Sun, whether they're IBM. Also, they need you're talking about the most, what's most in demand. Well, whether it's web developers, and usually on the web development, they want interactive developers, someone that can go across multiple channels, that can do more than just develop for the internet, develop for the iPhone, develop, you know, every channel they have out there. But they're all very different, just because you know how to develop code.
If there's a platform, then there's a set of developers that are focused on that platform.
Exactly.
And you focus on personalities too, right? Because
yes.
A lot of the developers who might know C++ or Java or .NET architecture, they're used to sitting in front of a laptop with a box of pizza with
yes.
with the door closed.
Oh,
they don't
yeah.
interact with very many people. How do you take that into account, that behavioral component, when you're matching up an IT worker with a client?
Well, some of the larger clients, they need multiple developers. And if you can have multiple developers, they don't have to be as social. They can go and we call it, you know, closet coders. but the smaller companies, they have to be able to do the whole gamut. I mean, because a lot of times the developers are doing project management as well. They're doing the testing. They're going to have to interact with the end users. And you know, that's going to be really important. So the smaller the company, the more they're going to have to do on a social level.
We tore out all the walls. So everybody's in the same big room with each other, right? So they can
yeah.
just look across the desk and see whoever's testing the software that they're writing right at the moment. In the olden days, everybody had their little cube.
Right.
And, you know, you had to do the prairie dog thing to be able to see another human being pop up out of your cube and look around. So I agree with you there. It's in the smaller firms, you do have to be a little bit more flexible, I guess.
Yeah.
It seems like in larger firms, there's a lot more specialization and you could be hired to be the person that changes the tape in the, you know, backup system. You may change 50 of them, but
in a large firm,
it's
very
it
possible.
Be.
It's very possible in a large firm for the database administrator not to have ever seen the security guy
exactly.
at all, or know what they do. It's they call it segregation.
Or even know where they are.
Yeah, or even know where they are.
Yeah.
They know. Is that the collaborative structure changing the IT space a little bit, George?
Oh, it's kind of hard to say. Only in businesses that have like a large business that would have like a publishing division, for example, where you'd have this little island, you know, of Mac users that are going to integrate with the Microsoft stuff on the other side, then you do see some of that.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. We're also streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. The computer guys are here. George Costello, he's the Apple expert, and Thomas O'Brien joining us, CEO of Ideology. We're giving perspective on where IT careers are heading, as is our third guest, Amy Gano, president of PCM Technology Solutions, an IT staffing solutions company. Kansas City, what IT job do you do or are you looking for, and how do you see your little corner of the industry changing? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or use your technology, man, and shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. We also have Facebook, and at KCURCST is our Twitter handle. I will slow down and say that. KCURCST is our Twitter handle. Let's talk about the changes in IT staffing. How have demands for IT services change the nature of staffing, Amy?
Well, it does seem, you know, with the economy kind of having a downturn, obviously, for the last couple of years, historically speaking, prior to the last, you know, 2 years, so 10 years prior to that, the majority of our business at PCM Resources has been mainly contract for hire, and I bet 90% of it has been in that contract realm, and only 10% in the permanent placement. But lately, in the last 2 years, we've really seen a more upswing in permanent placement needs from our clients. So I'd say even as far as up to 40% recently has it kind of shifted from the IT contracting to permanent placement needs.
And just kind of let's talk a little bit more about contracting, because okay. I think some people may not know what that means. I mean, these are 6-month or 3-month contracts.
It can be, for example, at J.P. Morgan, we'll do 18-month contracts. So it can be anything from a huge project that they're rolling out that once a project goes live, it'll be gone. H&R Block, they'll often do a contract from August clear through April. So it just really depends. And we do a lot of contract for hires, which are 3 or 6 months. They're typically 6-month contract for hires where the client will – they have a permanent opening, but they just use that route to kind of test out the candidate, and the candidate gets to test them out as well.
And, George, this sort of mercenary culture of a project-based culture rather than a full-time break-fix – sit in a development room or sit in a production room for 8 months and not talk to anybody, that type of culture. It's changing a little bit. What are the saturated IT markets, George?
The saturated
IT markets, just in mired
general?
Down in oil. What's saturated?
Amy would know that. I wouldn't.
What's saturated?
Business analysts. Quality assurance analysts.
What do they even do?
Well, they actually work with the end user. Business analysts work with the end user to define their needs. Then they take those needs and then work with the IT guy to translate those. Once the IT guy develops it, they actually take those, make sure they're actually what the client wanted.
And how do we get through this sort of jargon-laced soup of what's business intelligence, what's a business analyst, what's an operational flex capacitor?
Well,
operator.
Business intelligence is totally – that's a whole different – it's
right.
All on the the database side. But business analysts, what we've noticed, especially in the last 2 years, they were hit probably the hardest out of all the other areas. I mean, they were just hit – there were so many of them out of work because they can – if you hire a really good developer, they don't do it as well. But they can kind of, you know, fix that need temporarily, but things are going to get missed.
So are you saying that people that analyze systems across the production environment, the development environment, and – the sort of computing interface that goes to the end user, those 30,000-foot people are having less jobs?
Well, they're not necessarily – they're the ones that actually – they will work – like, for example, H&R Block, they'll actually work with the franchise office owners, find out what's wrong with their systems, figure out what needs to be fixed, and they go to the IT guy and have them, hey, here's the problem.
Yeah, they're more like the 3,000-foot people.
That's it.
They're
right.
Not the 30,000-foot
yes.
people. And I can see why they would have been – that category would have been hit, because that would be the place where you could save money in a business downturn and kind of push that function off to your developers who really don't like it that well.
And they don't do a very good job at it. You know, but they can do it if they have to.
So is that title coming back now?
It has. It's starting to come back, and the salary's starting to come back. It's not quite where it was at before, but we do see more and more that they're having to bring this back because they're missing things.
Amy, is it important to point out to our people who may be listening and also to your clients and, you know, just the general public that's interested in IT careers that developers are different from help desk admin?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. That's probably the most thought after skill. If you're wanting to go into a skill set, you're wanting to go get a degree, developers is the most we get the most openings for. Clients are asking for, whether it's .NET, Java, web, we're getting it all across. Even database developers. Anything in the development realm has been very, very, you know, high priority.
Tom, how does the advent of an internet-driven environment, a web-driven environment, you talked about .NET and Java, web-driven internet workflow environments and software as service architecture, how does that change the dynamic?
Well, you know, it's actually going back to the way it was in the 50s.
Wow.
In a sense, you know, most of the intelligence, you know, from the 1980s through about 2000, a lot of the intelligence was pushed out to the PC on the desktop. So you were focused on desktop applications in a lot of ways. And that was great, but it wasn't very manageable. It was really difficult to manage. And so as we got this bandwidth boom, we were able to take those functions back and deploy them centrally and just let the client be a little dumber than it was when the PC came along. Now, that's not to say that it really went full circle. There's good reasons for all of that. But I do have one thing to kind of add to what you said earlier, Amy, and that's, you know, on the tech guys, the people that sort of break and fix people, that's still in-demand job, and it is probably the one area in IT where you still have frazzled nerves. Because if you notice, when people's email goes or when their PC's down or something's not working, everything stops. So you have a category of people that need to be really able to react fast and know what's going on and be able to diagnose very quickly. It's not just a skill, it's an art.
And that's the point. It doesn't matter if you can write C++ code or if you can turn a dog into a cat with a graphics card. If something breaks, they need immediate assistance.
They do. Oh, yeah. And we do see, from a staffing perspective on that, a lot of companies, though, that's more of a skill set that you can get from a college degree and right after college, the first 1 or 2 years of experience. So they don't often come to a staffing company as much as they would off just typical careers, you know.
Right, because the degrees, a lot of the computer science degrees are really focused on the development titles.
Right.
And speaking of that, how do you train to be a help desk break fix generalist? How do you train to be a developer? I'll let George take the developer question.
Boy, that's a tough one. I've never really had a good answer to that in all the years that I've been doing this.
No good answers, just deep questions, George.
Deep questions.
Take it forward. How do you train to be a developer if you're looking at a specific skill set, want to be a developer?
I'm not a developer, so, I mean, I don't have that mindset. I'm more of a fix-it kind of guy.
You're a fix-it guy. You guys are fix-it guys, man.
We have one company that does nothing but fix-it. It really, you know, when you say how do you train, there's two answers to that. How do you get the training? And then how do you manage yourself to be able to handle the stress of the job? And I think that's one thing that I think a lot of people probably realize is that there is a lot of stress in a lot of different IT jobs. There are, as a developer, you have deadlines.
Yeah.
And you need to get product out the door. As a technician, you've got stuff that breaks and it's got to be back up. You know, if you're going to run a cloud, it can't be down at all.
Mm-mm.
So you really have to, you know, you have to be able to manage the stress in the profession. I would suspect it's one of the most stressful professions around.
Well, and as far as you're talking about what training you should do, I would highly recommend for our developers, especially our web developers, the clients are asking for portfolios. So go and design and develop a website that's fantastic. Try to use all your skill sets. Show them that you can think interactively, that you can, you know, build a great website, because they're going to ask you for links. They want to see what you've done.
To that end, Amy, how important are specialized degrees or specialized certifications?
Well, the certifications will help you get your basic training. So if you're wanting to learn more about Java, you can get a Java certification, especially in the database arena. It's very important. You know, they like to see that you have that suite of Microsoft, you know, certifications. But it's more just to kind of give you an edge up on the person you're competing with. Really, experience is what's going to get you the job.
And one thing we should point out, some of these certifications don't require a college education necessarily.
Right. Tell us a lot about that. Most of the technology ones do not. There are several organizations in town that you can go to, and you can just take a basic web development class. You can take C Sharp. You can take that. And then they teach you how to build your portfolio. So they're a great place to start when you're wanting to, you know, and then you complement that with experience, and that's what's going to get you the job.
Not that the college degree doesn't help.
Right.
Yes.
I was going to ask, how does that a kid coming out of high school who just says, I'm going to go get my Cisco certification, I'm going to go get my Microsoft channel certification,
actually,
I'm going to go learn Java, I'm going to go do XYZ, I don't need an MIS. I mean, what do you say to
that? A few years ago, I had a 19-year-old come into our office. He had passed 3 Cisco certifications and had never seen the equipment. He'd never used it. And he was as smart as a whip. We hired him. He was great. But it took about 6 months because he had to learn that the equipment didn't always do what he had learned that it was supposed to do. But it is possible to be a really good test passer and get the certifications and know very little about what's going on.
And to that end, Amy, it's also good to be able to talk to people about their Cisco routers without the technical jargon and have that nuance that you get, that communications nuance that you get from a college.
Exactly. And that's where the college comes in. And you're talking about the certifications. It is It's important to have them, but also we've noticed is the more stronger experienced folks, the ones that have 10, 15 years, they've kind of forgot some of the syntax, but they know it like the back of their hand, and they're not going to test as well.
RJ in Midtown, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, I've got a situation, two family members, as a matter of fact. I took early retirement as a business analyst and thought I could, you know, find consulting gigs and things like that to supplement my retirement income, but that was right as the economy went in the tank. So not a whole lot of stuff has come up since that happened. And then I've got a son that is pursuing a degree in gaming. You know, where's he going to go?
So let's take Amy, George, Tom. Let's take RJ's situation first. We were just talking about the dearth of business analysts, that little glut during this economic downturn where they were
first to be cut.
Let's take that scenario first, and then we'll let one of the computer guys take gaming.
Okay, to try to kind of help you to make yourself more marketable, one thing you could do is kind of the more technical you can get, the better. So even if it's learning a little bit about just taking some basic web classes, because a lot of them want to know that you can really – not that you need to get in there and code, but that you really understand when you're talking to the IT person what you're telling them can actually create. So the more technical you can, the better I can present you to a client. And also maybe kind of move into project management, because that's actually still been doing really well in the marketplace. And you can get your P&P certification, and then that will help make you more marketable as well.
Tell them what that certification is, the P&P certification.
Oh, it's a project management. So they actually go and it teaches you the different levels of project management, and it's more structured, and it teaches you every bit about it.
Let me follow that on, Amy. That's really true. Project management is a crucial component these days. The projects are more complex. The level of polish needs to be much higher, and clients know what they want a lot more than they used to, and they're much more in the details. So project management is a big one. I do want to talk about gaming.
Please do.
And here's the answer about that. The Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 sold $400 million in its first day. So there is demand for gaming professionals.
I would say that there might be some demand for gaming professionals based on those numbers. George, anything to add about the new influx of gaming programmers?
Well, not from my perspective, but gaming is becoming a much bigger thing on the Mac platform. I mean, every year it gets bigger, and particularly when the iPhone came out, you know, and they started doing the networking across the web type of game situation, and every issue of Mac product that you see has stronger and stronger hardware to support it. So it's becoming more, you know, that was traditionally a PC area of gaming, but it's more predominant now on the Mac.
And another piece of advice for RJ may be to get in there with Junior
and look at some of those gaming platforms, because gaming is becoming very prevalent on these game systems, which are now in and of themselves with broadband capability, their own sort of PCs.
Yeah, well, you can also think of gaming as sort of the leader, and the business will follow sometimes. I mean, there are interfaces that the gamers have used for years that business is now picking up on.
Let me throw something in, too. Tom was talking about, what was it, Modern Warfare that did all this business and so on. And that's been a trend in the gaming industry where you get better animation and, you know, smoother and so on. But I'd like to point out that there's success to be found at the other end of the spectrum. I mean, you take something like Angry Birds, for example, you know, which is just a runaway smash hit. Still, after a year or two of being on the market, one of the highest grossing apps that the Apple Store, the iTunes Store sells. And that's a very simple game. I mean, you know, so it's just a good idea.
But the game of IT careers is not as simple as that. The computer guys are here. George Costello, an independent Apple consultant. Thomas O'Brien, CEO of Ideology. He's also a consultant. Also with us is Amy Gano, president of PCM Technology Solutions, an IT staffing solutions company. We're talking about the changing nature of career ITs. We're ready to log off with a break, but we will reboot the discussion when we return and be joined by another IT recruitment specialist who will help this program shed some light on where careers in IT might be headed. Meanwhile, Kansas City, what IT job do you do, and how do you see your corner of the industry changing? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. A recent report from the research firm Computer Economics says that while 60% of the IT organizations the group surveyed are increasing IT operational spending, only 34% are increasing IT headcount. This means that while IT organizations may be willing to spend more money, they are not as willing to hire more people. That's one research report. We're joined by computer guys George Costello, an independent Apple consultant, and Thomas O'Brien, CEO of Ideology and also managing partner of Bold Internet Solutions. Whoa. Amy Gano is in the house. She's from PCM Technology Solutions. And joining us by phone is David Templeman, director of the recruiting for Riverpoint, an IT professional services firm. Welcome to Central Standard, Mr. Templeman.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Templeman, we'll begin with you since you're the new kid on the block, so to speak. Are you noticing in your work that spending is up but headcount is down? What are you seeing?
Companies continue to have budget restrictions. That's just one thing we're finding across the board. So I think we will see increased spending, and we're seeing increased spending from 2008, 2009 now, and I think we're going to continue to see that. But companies are still running lean and mean, and so that's one thing that you really have to be aware of. And I think you can also break the IT market into the big players. Here in Kansas City, you've got the Sprints and the H&R Blocks, and they operate on a different level than the smaller mid-sized companies that also have a lot of IT people.
Well, let's dial down into that question and maybe rephrase it and back up a little bit. Are companies spending more on infrastructure improvement or application development and maintenance or technological spending to upgrade current systems rather than bring actual people in?
I think they are spending more on the infrastructure and improving things than bringing people in, because people are a much higher cost than the actual servers and applications that reside on them.
Certainly. We're going to open up the thread, so to speak, get George, Amy, and Tom involved in the discussion. Trend suggests a growth in contingency staffing, Amy. Tell us what that means for your respective business.
And that means in contract labor. So whether it's on a contract for hire or straight contract, and it does seem, especially in the last, I'd say just this last year, that we've really started seeing it come back, because the last 2 years prior were pretty tough. And they're now starting to spend again, and they're starting to add some headcount. They're still running very lean. Right now the headcount we're seeing is because they lost so many folks. They were just trying to still maintain, and we're still wanting to see them get past that maintenance period.
Is this, Dave, where implementation experience or project management experience becomes more important? Because if you're putting more spending into developing or upgrading current systems and hiring less heads, does that training become more important?
I absolutely think that training is important and diversity is important. The more jobs that you can do, the more valuable you are to an employer. If you have some project management skills along with the ability to get into a server and dig around in the nuts and bolts on the server, you're going to have some value to them because you can essentially serve the role of two resources as opposed to just one.
Tom, it sounds to me like he's saying that the generalists are back. What do you think of that?
Well, it's generalist maybe. Maybe it's multiple specificists.
You know? Multiple specificists.
Ooh,
you just got freaky here.
You can be like me, way too general. I can't do anything. But if you are, you know, if you have a couple of really good core skills, it's not as hard to add one more, and that makes you even more valuable. So, for instance, you might have somebody who's great as a web developer and knows PHP, and maybe they've also picked up administration of, you know, Linux boxes, so they can do that in a light kind of situation, and that helps a lot.
George, talk about the jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none skills that you might need in this IT space.
Well, again, it depends on where you are and what you're doing. My experience over the years as more of a fix-it kind of guy has been that, you know, what you might read in a book is not what you're going to find out in the real world. And also, different operating systems and even sometimes different models of computers actually have personalities. I mean, there'll be behaviors that you'll see. There'll be where there was used to be one model, for example, of a Mac, and it would eat batteries. I mean, where others would not. But, I mean, you have to sort of acclimate yourself to the type of equipment that you're working on and the operating systems just like you would people. You know, where people have personalities and traits and so forth. And that's something you can't learn in a book.
David Templeman, we have an email in from your namesake, another David, who emails us to share a recent experience in the changing IT market. He says, quote, I work in IT doing video systems admin and storage admin. That's administration for you listeners. Some friends of mine that do video editing landed a big gig at a local KC business and needed help build out of an editing environment. I started consulting via email for about a month, but before I got on site, they let all their hourly contractors go and hired a big firm to do all of their production. David, talk about that scenario, Mr. Templeman, and how that works. You have contingency hiring, you have contract hiring, you have piecemealing of these different projects, but then suddenly an enterprise or a small and medium-sized businesses switches gears.
Right, and that makes sense. If you're dealing with it on a piecemeal basis, that means that you're utilizing resources inside the organization to manage the projects, to make sure that the timelines are being met, to make sure that you have the right people in the right place at the right time. And sometimes that just becomes a little bit overwhelming, and it's more efficient for you to hand it off to a company that basically will take you to where you need to be without much intervention internally from you. And so that is something that definitely is out there and happens.
How do you deal with that from a staffing perspective as essentially a go-between? And we'll bring Amy in for her take on that.
Well, what we see often is just because they outsource it, what they get back isn't exactly what they wanted often. So they'll get it back and it looks like it works, and then they start operating it on a local level and all of a sudden they're having challenges. It was written offshore, the code isn't compatible, it's not maintainable, and then typically we'll have to come in and fix it. You know, or they'll have to hire some resources locally to come in and fix it. Not all the time. Sometimes they have companies like Keen and EDS that, you know, manage it on a day-to-day basis, but that's really expensive. And a lot of mid-sized companies can't afford to pay the Accenture and the Keens.
Tom, has that ever happened to you where you started on a project and you've been working on a project and you understand the project, but then they say, we're going to bring in Accenture. They cost more, but we're going to get it done quicker because I have more resources.
No, that hadn't happened.
Never happened to you.
No, it hasn't happened to us. However, we're kind of doing that. I mean, we needed to augment our staff by three or four people. We didn't have time to hire individuals. So we ended up hiring a firm to collaborate with us on the project. And I think that happens a lot. You see a lot of 3 to 5 person teams that go out for hire and they do the projects with you.
How do you handle this subculture, George, of third and fourth party subcontractors on one project?
Well, I don't see hardly any of that in the Mac world. There just really isn't very much development per se.
Dave, do you ever run into that component where you'll have one person on the implementation, one person on security, one person on
a SQL Server database or one person on an in-house application?
Yeah, we run
How do
into
you handle
it.
That?
Well, you got to remember that you're dealing with a team of people, and they're all there, hopefully, to accomplish the same goal. We don't run into a lot of conflicting interests, but every once in a while, you're going to have somebody trying to drive an agenda that maybe isn't best for the company or best for the project, and that certainly can cause issues. But I think that's the exception rather than the rule when you're dealing with multiple different entities dealing with one project.
Sammy and Casey Moat writes, and I quote, "I'm in the programming for the web. I've been doing it for about 16 years. In January, I stayed alive in the industry by staying fresh and keeping track of the latest technologies. Obviously, the more you know, the better off you are. As a programmer, you'll be fine if you can keep learning and developing what it is you do. It's the kind of thing that you don't just get into unless you love it." Amy, you got some thoughts on that?
I couldn't agree with her more. You have to stay current. On that, you know, every time, you know, there used to be VB.net. Now there's C#. I mean, you have to stay current on the latest technologies if you want to stay marketable.
And Tony writes, "I've been in the IT industry for about 15 plus years with several certifications in the security realm. I'm at a point where it's not practical for me to start a full college degree program, but I do want to take specific courses that would include scripting." I'm assuming she's meaning JavaScripting and cross-site scripting in various operating systems such as Windows, Linux, etc. "Do you have any recommendations on where I can obtain these classes in the KC area?" Anybody can jump in and take that. Dave Templeman?
I think the junior colleges are a great place to start because they're low cost and you can get in and get these classes. There's also a number of different dedicated IT training places in town that you can
Horizon.
Take various classes.
Centrix.
Just Centric or New Horizons.
New Horizons is one.
You need to be, whatever you do, you need to be a critical buyer. You're the one that's buying their service of training you or teaching you something, and you need to really make sure you evaluate it carefully to get the best deal for yourself and to make sure that they've got the qualifications to get you what you want to learn.
Yeah.
Let's get in on a big question in the KC area and let everybody sort of expound on it. Locally, Google Fiber, mobile computing, and cloud services all play a part in how IT careers may shift locally. What's everyone's near-term outlook? We'll start with Amy.
Well, you know, the more interactive the companies are becoming, the more they're focusing on all, you know, getting their message across multiple channels and doing it as quickly as possible and as easy as possible. And so the more collaboration that they are having with every channel.
Tom?
Takes the friction out of things.
Yeah.
Kansas City, there are a lot of entrepreneurs in this area. We're an entrepreneurial community. We've got a great foundation that supports entrepreneurism with the Kauffman Foundation. Mm-hmm. And these things like Google Fiber and some of the other things that we've got really help that atmosphere.
Is Google Fiber, Dave Templeman, going to make IT careers and IT services magically delicious?
I don't know about
Is
magically
it a lucky
delicious. It's going to drive a lot of entrepreneurism here in town. It's going to bring companies to town that want to try the fiber backbone and see how they can deliver services throughout the country. So it's definitely going to drive innovation, and it's going to continue to increase the demand for technical people across the board in Kansas City. And I think you're going to see a lot of competition amongst the new players as well as the established players here in Kansas City to get that top IT talent.
George Costello, I say magically delicious because there seems to be a prevailing myth that Google Fiber is going to change the way graphics pop up. It's going to change operating systems. It's going to turn computers into flying Pegasuses. It's really just about bandwidth and delivery of data.
It is, but it's a great mystery. I mean, we truly do not know what the end result is going to be. We don't know how people are going to make use of it. We do know that there probably will be things we haven't thought of yet. But the great thing about it is that Kansas City will become a sort of a laboratory, you know, for experiments. And let's try this out.
You said that kind of creepy, man.
Well,
a laboratory.
You know,
that's going to be very helpful for this city. We could be a real center for innovation.
You mentioned gaming. Gaming might be a very specific platform for that. Mary in Liberty, Missouri asked, she's a web developer But more than any other position, she's really in knowledge management. She's an electronic librarian for a company and manages the intellectual capital that the employees produce and sell to clients. What's the market for knowledge managers here in Kansas City? Or is it something else? Business intelligence.
Yes. Yes. That's one of the hot buttons. We're getting lots of requests for those, and there's not a lot of folks that do it. So she's in a great field, very marketable.
Is she able to say knowledge manager instead of business intelligence?
Either one. Most companies, they use business intelligence, and if you're working with an HR department, I don't know if they'll necessarily – they should know, but, you know, I would definitely say business intelligence as well.
Not really wise, Dave Templeton, to walk into an HR department and say, bump that, I'm a knowledge manager.
You have to use the verbiage that they're using in their job descriptions. I mean, you can call somebody three different things, and it all is accurate. So you want to really, when you're looking at different employers, you want to definitely look at the titles that they're using and make sure that you're aligning with their expectations.
Really briefly, David, talking nanoseconds, what areas are growing in KC and what areas are shrinking?
Growth or mobile application developers, web developers, user experience, security, BI, data warehouse. Those are all growth areas. The things that are shrinking are some of the older technologies that you find out there, the client-server distributed applications, mainframe stuff, things like that.
Do you agree, Amy?
Yes.
Do you agree, Tom?
Yep, absolutely.
And George?
Well, there's no question that, you know, mobile is where it's at.
Yeah.
Mobile is where it's at. We've been talking to George Costello, an independent Mac consultant. Thomas O'Brien is the CEO of Ideology and Bold Internet Solutions, managing partner.
Very
Amy
good.
Gnoll, president of PCM Technology Solutions. And joining us on the phone was Dave Templeman, director of recruiting for Riverpoint, an IT professional services firm. Thank you for joining us to talk about IT careers.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
All right.
It's time now for a technology news lightning round with Thomas O'Brien and George Costello.
And now it's time for a change of pace, the lovely electronic voice. Healthcare IT is among the leading job markets in technology, according to Medzilla.com. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, healthcare is in desperate need of IT anyway. You're finding the electronic health record, the ability to take that huge folder of paper that used to follow you around from doctor to doctor and put it into electronic form. Government money is driving that into the private practices. There's a huge demand.
We'll let Amy get in on that real quick.
Well, the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability
right.
Act is huge. That HIPAA compliance, we've seen they have to have be compliant or they'll get fined big time. I mean, it's a lot of money for them, for those companies, if they're not compliant. And these health insurance companies, they have all of your data and they haven't really protected it. So the government stepped in and said, hey, you know, we need you to really start protecting these people's privacy.
Big part of the stimulus programs as well. Hewlett-Packard's WebOS operating system. What is the deal with WebOS?
Those poor people at WebOS, they've been kicked around so much.
Yeah.
It's too bad. They developed a really nifty little OS for a handheld device, and then they got bought up by Hewlett-Packard, and now they're orphaned.
Is this a move, George, for HP to move out of the computer business and into the services business, a la International Business Machines?
Yeah, to me it looks like a rerun of what happened with IBM way back when. HP has had its troubles, as everybody knows, and there's been plenty of turnover there in the executive suite. But honestly, they've kind of gotten lost in the shuffle. And personally, I think it's all over for them. I mean, I saw a quote the other day from Meg Whitman, the new CEO, saying that they were going to be a major player in tablets in 2013. And I looked at it and I said, are you kidding me? I mean, it's over. You know, I mean, they've already lost the battle.
Next item, Alec Baldwin dressed up as an airline pilot to defend his use of electronics on the airplane. But new information from the FAA and the Department of Defense suggests that an open-access 4G wireless broadband network interferes with about 75% of the GPS receivers that they had. Does this give credence to the old turn your phone off on the plane interference? What's happening with this 4G signal that's messing with GPS?
Is that information or is it disinformation? That's my question. You know, I don't know. You can aim these 4G signals anywhere you want, usually down, because that's mostly where people are, is on the ground or close to it. I'm dubious.
What do you think about that, George?
I don't know. There's always been kind of a gray area there about how electronic devices may or may not influence, you know, aircraft electronics. I just don't know the real answer there.
In the words of the great IT expert Chris Rock, if a phone can interfere with my plane, I don't want to be on that plane. Twitter is changing its interface to make things more navigable and updating smartphones and tablets. Does anybody care? Is this significant?
Aren't those people at Twitter nice that they changed their interface to make it easier for us? Isn't that great?
That's great.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think a lot of people don't get Twitter entirely. And I think they don't – what a lot of people that don't tweet – think is that because I don't send out tweets from my smartphone, Twitter is irrelevant to me. What they need to realize, and I think what this new interface is going to help them do, is that the search capabilities of Twitter are a great way of curating knowledge about almost anything that you want to find out about.
Oh, yeah.
That people are talking about. So I'm all for it.
And everybody in IT is very into Twitter. I mean, not everybody, but it's very prevalent in IT.
So, Amy, you'll benefit from this new Twitter interface.
Yes. Well, and also we started, you know, you tweet your company information. We use it to, we need referrals. We ask people for referrals on it. So you can use it as a marketing tool.
Georgia, a German court recently ruled that Apple's iPhone and iPad devices infringe on a Motorola patent and issued an injunction against sales of the product in Germany, which is one of the top five markets, consumer markets in the world. Is this significant?
Yawn.
But what does it have to do with Motorola's proposed merger with Google for its handset business? Is Google behind this?
Well, everybody sees conspiracy and all of this stuff. You know, and this legal, all of these legal battles, I mean, they've just really gotten out of hand. They're fighting in Australia and they're fighting in the European Economic Union. And, I mean, every other day there's a different decision. And in some places they've banned the Galaxy Tab and in other places. I mean, you can't even keep track of all this anymore.
Speaking of Google, within the last week, Google Maps goes indoors. They released Google Currents, the free mobile app updating the news bubble, allowing people to build their own magazine interfaces. Google Plus has the Find My Face app. I don't personally want my face found for photo recognition. Is Google becoming too big?
When you're inside a Walmart, don't you want to be able to whip out your smartphone and find out where the toilet paper is? When you're at an airport, don't you want to know where the bathroom is? Instead of looking at the signs, look on your smartphone. I think Google's got something going with this indoor mapping thing.
What do you think, George?
I don't know.
Should they know everything? Should they know everything? Should they be
not
in everything?
Nah. Too much information out there.
Amy, any quick thoughts on Google's pervasiveness?
I think it sounds exciting. There's going to be some people that will love it. To me, I would just prefer to look for signs.
Just prefer to look for signs.
That's what I'd like.
Physically.
Physically look for signs.
That's old school. Apple recalls a first generation Nano for a hot battery after 5 years.
If you've got one of those little square edged Nanos that they came out 5 years ago, they have a lithium ion battery in them. Those batteries degrade over time, and Apple issued a recall. So if you didn't register it or for some reason you've moved or whatever, go to the Apple support site and look it up, because they'll send you a mailer. You can stick your Nano in it, send it back. They will fix it, meaning probably put a new battery in it, and send it back to you. So it extends the life of a perfectly good device.
Windows XP has about 800 more days of Microsoft support less in 800 days spells your doom. What's up with that?
People are still using Windows 98 someplace, I'm sure. But, you know, Windows XP is one of the most popular OSs that Microsoft ever came out with. People are really used to it. They just don't want to let it go. It's got that warm and fuzzy going for it.
They're comfortable with it.
Yeah. So, you know, unfortunately, it's as holy as can be in terms of security, and it's much more difficult to manage.
Now, when you say holy, you don't mean Bible, Quran, or Torah.
He means
you
Swiss
mean
cheese.
It's porous.
Yes, yeah. Like Swiss cheese, exactly. Yeah.
Why do people hold on to OSs? And to that end, is it hurting Microsoft to come out with one OS every time you say the word OS?
You know, there's two sides to that argument. I mean, the big companies, it doesn't matter whether it's Apple or Microsoft or whoever it is. I mean, they want to keep issuing something so that they can sell you something, you know. And it's just an ongoing deal where they try to add bells and whistles and convince you that you have to have this. On the other hand, most of the existing software that's out there does everything that the average user needs to do. So it's a battle. You know, it's a constant struggle, and there's, you know, it's going to go on probably for the rest of my lifetime.
Keep your fingers limber because the touch interface is coming to the PC, Windows 8 in next August. And, you know, we're going to be able to buy touch screens instead of the plain old LED screens that we've been buying and poke our fingers all around. It'll be really fun.
Speaking of poking your fingers all around and having fun, Kinect for Windows on the way soon.
Yeah. You know, Kinect was an Xbox interface that allowed, you know, it to, you know, you could free yourself from holding a controller in your mm-hmm. hand when you're playing a game or doing exercise or whatever. Now it's coming to, in early 2012, it's going to be coming to the PC. That means that they're shortening it up, so it's going to be able to detect movements of your fingers. I see virtual keyboards coming from the Kinect for Windows. Maybe not this year.
Are you a swami? Do you see yes. virtual keyboards
you don't
in
see
your future?
The thing I'm wearing on my head right now, do you?
Yeah, and Apple's looking into that as well. They're experimenting with it.
Is it ease of use or cool factor that a lot of technology companies are going to? What's going to happen to the plain old boot up and compute?
Keyboards are complicated. They got 104 keys. You got to remember where every one of those is.
And going back to our earlier conversation, to close you out, Amy, what does the new technology and evolution, the fast evolution of technology, do for IT staff?
Oh, we love it because then they always have to have experts come in and it's always increasing the workload that they're going to need. So we love it because it keeps us employed.
That about does it for the Tech Lightning Round and this edition of Central Standard. George Costello is an independent Mac consultant. Thomas O'Brien is the CEO of Ideology, managing partner of Bold Internet Solutions as well. Thank you for joining us on the show. Amy Gnoe, pleasure to have you on today's show. She's the president of PCM Technology Solutions, and we also had David Templeman earlier. So tune in tomorrow for a look at the KC tradition going strong as ever, the KC Reps production of A Christmas Carol, Humbug. We have help from Tamika Weatherspoon, and our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with Mayor Sly James. I got to talk to him. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.